Every day, hundreds of thousands of us are building a future we can all be proud of. For over 36 years, the Growth Cbus My Super investment option has returned an average of 8.98% per annum for its members, while investing in projects that not only create jobs, but a better future. Cbus, for all of us. To consider if Cbus is right for you, go to cbussuper.com.au for a PDS. Past performance is not a reliable indicator of future performance. I had to go about it, write it out.
It's the weekend again, which means on the final word, we have ourselves some story time. I'm Adam Collins, and down the other end of my Zoom screen sits Jeff Lemon in his wood cabin. I'm decked out in a blanket on the sofa because it's the start of the English season tomorrow. We're recording this midweek, giving nothing away early on, and that means the temperature plummets. Izzy Westbury, Jeff, did some research on this yesterday, and in each of the last 5 years, with the exception of 2020, when of course there was no county championship in April, the temperature's gone from like roughly 18 to 20 in the week before the season before dropping to single digits when ball is meeting bat in round one, and that is precisely what's happened again. I'm freezing, but I'm happy. Hello, Jeff.
One of my favourite things for the week was watching all of the social media accounts for all of the cricket publications just putting up the same clips of like, oh, look, it's snowing at some training. There are times sort of like, you got to cast your net a bit wider, fellas. You know, like, come on. It's quite nice here in Australia. So, you know, I just went for a walk. It was quite pleasant outside, even though it's nighttime. Relatively mild. So you know, make of that what you will. I feel cold looking at you, basically.
Yeah, it reminds me of, well, you do this quite a bit, wear the blanket over your shoulders when we're recording, when it's deep midwinter in Melbourne. So nice to be able to reverse that as we start our new season over here. We will keep this as brief as we can this week. I'm mindful we nearly went for 2 hours on story time last weekend, which was lots of fun, but we probably don't need to be talking for 2 hours at the weekend. We'll see how we go. Before we get into the new numbers and all the rest of it, Dare to Dream, our trip to Pakistan and Brazil, continues to gather steam. And Urban has been in touch saying, if we need a spare smoker or a fifth scorer, he's available for either of those. He might be our pastry chef as well. So the support staff is going well. Bernie Prinz has a potato skills that he wants to offer us on the tour. I mean, we're going to take those up, aren't we? If you've got potato skills,
How vague that is. And I feel that we shouldn't inquire anymore. I think something like that should be left as a surprise.
You know, as it
best,
is.
Best left. Because it could be anything. It could be glorious. One of my friends, when I was a teenager, built one of those potato cannons.
I was thinking the same thing.
You know, lengths of PVC pipe with the igniter from the hot water system. Yeah. And you spray some hairspray or whatever in there. And, vividly remember firing people's laundry off their clotheslines over the back fence if you could, you know, get it in the middle of a T-shirt or something, if you'd, like, pin it to the back door. So whether the skills relate to that, I don't know, Bernie, but I look forward to finding out once we're mid-air.
Yeah, I'm not sure if we bring a piece of PVC piping that's a bit like a Kalashnikov into Pakistan, it'll end well, but, you know, we'll see how things play out on that front.
Onto a flight anywhere, probably.
We've got a cricketer, Ben Slater, who's one of my best friends and a fine player at that. He wants to come, so I think he's our number three, and I think in practice he'll probably be our captain as well because he's very good at that. So thanks, Slats, for putting your hand up to come on tour. Nick Tewson hasn't specified what support staff role he'll play, so I'm assuming that he's going to be a cricketer too. So we've got two legitimate players in Ben and Nick, so thanks for both getting in touch. Matthew Jones, who we've been working on his Nerd Pledge recently, informed us that in terms of proximity to Sao Paulo, it is 9,491 kilometres for me and 13,077 kilometres for Jeff. So on both the Pakistan route and the Brazil route, the first leg will be quicker for me, which is good to know. Thank you, Matthew. Mm. And I also should note, we had a number of messages over the weekend informing us that the Tailenders podcast are also going to Brazil. Roberta went on their show last week, and that's just fantastic. We're not quite sure how this is going to stitch together, but I have been in touch with the Tailenders guys after their interview, and once we're allowed to legally be in pub gardens together, we will combine for a beer or a glass of wine or something like that, and we'll see what the art of the possible is next year for that Brazil leg of the trip, of course, because we're going to Pakistan too, so that could be huge. I don't really know where it's going to land, but it sounds quite exciting.
Yeah, this was quite funny watching all of that unfold. ourselves.
Yes.
There's people going, wait, hang on, what's going on here? We are fine. I need to specify, we're fine with the Brazilian cricket team seeing other podcasts. That's, you know, we have a liberal-minded approach to these things. And as the recent episode, Keys in the Bowl, indicated, look, the more the merrier. Let's get everybody on this trip and make it the trip of our lifetimes. Why not?
Yep.
At such time as people are actually free and happy to travel around and enjoy their lives again. Why shouldn't we all do that together?
Yeah, especially considering the horrible news out of Brazil the last couple of days in terms of their COVID deaths and infections going absolutely through the roof. So something to look forward to in terms of when that country gets back on its feet again. On the other leg, the Pakistan Derek Ismail Khan leg, we've had a ton of messages asking for the T-shirt that we flagged last week. So, Jeff, you've got some work to do. You're going to have to work on this during the week. We're going to be catching up with League Tees again, and we'll find a way to have the Derek Ismail Khan logo alongside the Final Word logo, and we'll put that on sale as soon as it is possible. I was wondering, Jeff, based on our weekly show conversations the last couple of weeks about Mr. Sheffield, whether we might have to do a Sheffield Shield nanny Final Word crossover tee as well. So always good to throw these ideas on the whiteboard and see what sticks, you know?
Yeah, I think we'll have to have a segment at some point where we're going to run through the ideas that we've got and put some feelers out, because I'm sure there are people who remember much more clearly what we've said on the show than we do, given that it all sort of goes past in a terrifying blur while we're recording. So we're not organised to do that this weekend, but we will do that at some point.
You know what I think we should do, Jeff, in our, what are we calling it? Not a live recording session, but in 2 weeks' time, as we said on the weekly show, we're inviting our patrons to sort of watch us record
just
a show.
To sit in.
Just to sit in.
To hang out.
Yeah.
You know, it's
So in that Q&A, so we'll put an invitation to all our patrons. Not a bad time to sign up if you do want to get on board and help us overtake Jimmy Anderson on 614. But when we're doing the Q&A, maybe we'll also go through our merchandise ideas and we can hive mind what some of the T-shirts and other bits and pieces might look like.
We'll also be hive-minding a bit in terms of the answers on today's show, because in the revisit section there are quite a few numbers which are, quite frankly, NFI, and we're going to need to reach out for some assistance on those.
Yeah, it's getting harder, isn't it? And that's fine. We're not dissuading you from or discouraging you from sending us clues, but some of the clues have been extremely difficult to decipher. So we're all about no clue to start with, giving us some space to run in the yard, have a little frolic, have a little gallop, and then upon getting it wrong, then steering us in the right direction. Perhaps that might be a better practice so that we can tell some better stories. But equally, if you want to tell us a really pointed clue, that's fine as well. Where we get in trouble are the cryptic ones, isn't it?
Yeah, we're not well equipped for that. mathematics and cryptic crossword clues. You know our weakness. And once you've found that weakness, you just press down on it. You press down. What was that? I remember the AFL footballer Jonathan Brown talking about how Lee Matthews saw them smiling once and yelled at them, and his closing statement was, "We never smiled again." Like, wow, that sounds awful. That sounds absolutely horrible. I mean, sure, you won some premierships, but you never smiled again.
That's,
Jesus Christ.
It's like
a curse. It's like an ancient Greek, you know. Oh, sure, you can taste the golden ambrosia of the gods, but you're cursed to never smile again, Jonathan Brown.
I don't think Barry Cable ever smiled again after Lee Matthews dealt with him, but that's a whole different story. I think the Lee Matthews line, "If they bleed, we can kill it," from Predator was more persuasive than "You will never smile again." Anyway, Jeff, I think with all that said and done, it is time for a little bit of
Nerd Pledge. Nerd Pledge. It's the game around which we base this show, the game that we play with the people on our Patreon page, those lovely folk who keep the show going, and they do so by sending us little contributions, little Barack Obama 2008 contributions.
Hell yeah.
But not in a round number, not in a 5 or a 10, but in a very specific number of currency units, because that number relates to cricket in some way and we have to work out what it is. The first number is $2.56, and it comes in from the quadruple H. That is Harry Howard, who became known on this show as Harry Hoffney Hobart Hines Howard, the 256. And Harry says, he sends a clue. You don't have to do that, but you can, and Harry does. The quintuple H says, "The number I'm referencing could probably have reached a lot higher, but it reflects well on this cricketer that it didn't. Thoughts?
Well, my first thoughts were 256. It could be the number of test runs somebody has made, ending with a really high average, or perhaps more likely the bowling average, 25.6 for a player who might only have a dozen wickets and thus having bowled more would have potentially swelled that number. But I didn't go much further than that.
Yeah.
Thought I'd leave it to you.
Well, I'm coming back to this phrase that it reflects well on this cricketer, which means it's got to be something to do with selfishness or a lack thereof, because there are lots of numbers in cricket that are better if they're lower, you know, like an economy rate or a bowling average or a buys conceded or whatever. But that's not necessarily, like, that could apply to any cricketer. There's got to be something specific about this where a higher number would have been, you know, maybe someone playing it safer for themselves or something like that. There's the Ken Barrington 256 that he makes to bat out a draw against the Australians after they've made 600 odd. So maybe it reflects well on him that he was disciplined and didn't try to score more runs, because he faced, I haven't looked this up as part of the show, it just occurred to me, but he faced 600 odd deliveries and batted for maybe 11 and a half hours, something like that. So maybe he could have scored more and didn't.
That's the response to the Simpson 311, isn't it? So it's, if I recall correctly, those two huge scores in a very boring draw at Old Trafford, I want to say. Yeah. That all could work.
So I mean, you know, a bowling average obviously is, it's good that it's low. Andy Roberts, Josh Hazlewood had a 25.6 test average. Colin Stewart in One Day Internationals, I was pleased to see, 25.6. Remember Colin Stewart, West Indies fast bowler who played 5 ODIs? Gosh. He came out on the 2000-2001 tour to Australia when they were getting absolutely poleaxed by Steve Waugh's team. He was from Guyana, short, skiddy. He was batting with Brian Lara in that one day at the SCG when Lara made 100 in a run chase, and was batting with Colin Stewart at number 10, I think. And then the rain came when they needed 40 or 50 to win, and Lara was absolutely going off his chops and ruined a potentially all-time great finish.
Yeah, I remember from that series that it was like thoroughly dominant for Australia. Mm. They were part of that run they were on where they just couldn't be touched. And I remember it was the first series where we had play-on music for batsmen as they were walking out, and I don't remember what song it is, and someone will remind me, but Mervyn Dillon had something noteworthy as he walked out to bat in each of the games for the West Indies as their opening bowler. So that will be in the back of someone's mind, I'm sure, and let me know.
Mostly for that, I remember that I think it was the following summer, or maybe it was 2002-03, when New Zealand were touring, 2001-02. There were about five different players in the New Zealand 11 who had Sandstorm as their walk-on music. I don't know if it was just really popular in the team at the time, or the DJ just applied it for everyone who hadn't put in a preference. You know, you better tell me a song or you get Sandstorm. But yeah, sports betting enthusiast Chris Cairns walking out to is a memory that lingers long for me. So yeah, Colin Stewart, memory lane. So the only thing that occurred to me was, it could it be a daring declaration, you know, where someone declared on 256 setting a lower target? But New Zealand's made 256 without being bowled out a bunch of times. Of Stephen Fleming in the third innings at Perth in 2001 declared on 256, but at that point they were nine down and Chris Martin was next to come in and they were 440 in front, so I wouldn't really class that as daring. You know, he passed up the opportunity to have Chris Martin increase the lead. In 2018, when New Zealand were batting for a draw against England, they were 256 for eight at the end. Ish Sodhi 56 from 168 balls. So you could say it reflects well on him that he didn't try to score more runs. But look, all of that's a roundabout way of saying that I don't know. So if someone can decode Harry Howard's clue, again, the number I'm referencing could probably have reached a lot higher, but it reflects well on this cricketer that it didn't. If you can solve that during the next few days, let us know. Or Harry, if you want to send us a hint in a DM, you can do that too.
Next up, Jeff, we have from Joe Reinhardt, 544. I just went with bowling figures on this one. So 544 has been taken 32 times in international cricket, never by Chris Lewis, who was cap 544 for England. The first time 544 was taken was actually a game by coincidence, Jeff, that you were talking about no more than 3 or 4 days ago on our previous story time, which is the Sydney Ashes Test of 1888.
Oh, yes.
Where Charlie Terra-Turner took 5 for 44 from 50 overs when the two openers bowled. JJ Ferris bowled 47, I think it was, so they bowled 97 of the first 100 overs or something ridiculous like that. But yes, 5 for 44 from 50 was his figures, and backed it up with 7 for 43 in the second to finish with 12 for 87 from 88 overs in a losing effort, which is just utterly ridiculous. But I suppose reflective of the times, Jeff, that we would see a scorecard that looked that bonkers. Other noteworthy 5 for 44s, though. Terry Alderman at Leeds in 1989 on the final day there. I think that is the most significant away victory for Australia, certainly in that decade. But you could argue that got the ball rolling on something very special. The first test match of the 89 Ashes series, and it was Alderman on the final day, as it was throughout the course of that series when he picked up 41 wickets. Graham Swan, Jeff, at Lords, one you'll remember from 2013 when he hit Bucky in the dick, and then you went out and recorded your Hey Watson video about Shane's injudicious use of the DRS, which denied Bucky the chance to use it himself.
Well, no, it was actually Chris Rogers' injudicious use of the DRS, because Chris Rogers later confessed that he told Shane Watson to review that one, Watto was going to walk off, and Rogers said, I reckon that's going down, and so Shane Watson reviewed it, and then Chris Rogers, having already facilitated burning that review, did not feel confident in using the other review for himself when he was hit in the box by a full toss from Graham Swan about a foot outside leg stump that inexplicably got given out LBW. So, that was...
Yeah, he didn't pick it up right. I think it was above the sight screen. Mm. Whatever it was, he did not see the ball, and the rest is history. But thankfully, that was his the second test match of that series. By the end of it, he was pounding runs. He made 100 at Durham, which was celebrated widely. Another 5 for 44 I want to mention is Harmanpreet Kaur. She picked up a 5-wicket bag in one of her two test matches against South Africa in 2014. The other would have been against England, I suppose, in 2014 at Wormsley. But two things here. One is that the good news is she'll get to add to that tally of test matches when England hosts them here in what will probably be, as my sources are telling me, it'll probably be in the fourth week of June. And a get well for Harmanpreet as well. She's got COVID-19. She tested positive last week. I gather from the reporting that she hasn't got severe symptoms, but all the same, she's laid up at the moment. So hopefully she'll be back on her feet, fit as a fiddle and ready to roll when they come to England later in the season. So that's my suite of options for 544. Joe Reinhart, let us know.
Lovely. Our next number is a double header. This means two different people have the same number, but they might have it for completely different reasons. The number is $2.17. It comes in from Hamish Stairs, who is my favourite patron with a name that is also a complete sentence, and Ricardo Casamento. I'm doing the fingers into the webcam at the moment. You can't see that, but I just want you to know that that's happening. There is a clue from Richard, which will be very close to the heart of one Adam Collins. An ODB, says Richard. I like that he's turned the dusty old bastard into an old dirty bastard, who is the rapper from the Wu-Tang Clan, which, you know, I appreciate. Hey, dirty, baby, I've got your money. Don't you worry. An ODB. They're pretty much the same thing. And indeed, when we came up with the DOBs, that was the first reference we thought of from Richard. So you are very close to what we were intending people to think about. So a dusty old bastard, that means, which is a very old cricketer who did not play a lot of test cricket. Richard says, not as impressive as his son, but his son's achievements were not cricket related. Adam, as you sailed into the seas of the dusty old bastards, what did you turn up?
Yeah, I'm not going to have the music played this week because we haven't solved it. So, Richard, as you know, as everybody knows who listens to this segment, it's to do with the cap number when we do a DOB. So 217 is very much the cap of a player who qualifies, that being George Wood, who played three test matches in 1924. If we were absent the bit about his son's achievements that were more impressive and not cricket-related, I'd just go away and tell you George Wood's story now. However, I've spent a lot of time on the internet, full stop, end of sentence, new paragraph. I've spent a lot of time on the internet looking up George Wood's life.
Full stop.
New paragraph. But I can't find anything to do with any of his offspring. Now, that doesn't mean that there isn't a son who went on to do considerable things outside of the cricketing arena. It just means it's not within my search terms. So what I thought I might do, Richard, is let us know during the week if we're right that it relates to George Wood and if it does have to do with one of his kids. And once we get to that point, then we'll go away and tell the full story, both father and son.
Yeah, well, I also had a look around for a son of George Wood and couldn't find anything. But I am related to several professional historians and archivists. So if, Richard, we get the go-ahead that, yes, George Wood is who we're looking at, then I will find his children. I'll find where they live. I'll find their descendants. I'll turn up at their house if need be. You know, these things are within
I love the house, idea of. I really love the idea of you commissioning your father, you know, esteemed historian, to go away and try and find a dusty old bastard or an old dirty bastard in this case by the name of George Wood and his kid. That makes me very happy.
Maybe we're actually looking at one of the sons of ODB, no longer with us, sadly, left this world in a recording studio, I believe. I'm pretty sure he went out as he would have wanted. The ticker gave up while he was in the booth laying down some hot bars. So we've still got Hamish Stairs to deal with as well. So 217, because I was also looking at George Wood and so on, I also happened to notice that 217 is the West Indies test cap number of Floyd Reefer. It should have been 420, obviously, his cap number, but sadly it was not. Floyd Reefer, who you probably haven't heard of, you may well not have heard of even if you watched a lot of cricket. He played four tests in the late 90s, made a total of 63 runs in those four tests, and that was it. No thanks, champion. Averaged about 30, just over 30 in first-class cricket. You know, not a compelling career, although he played a lot of first-class cricket. And then came 2009. Bangladesh were visiting. It was the middle of the West Indies player strike, and all of the West Indies players were had been shut out by the West Indies Cricket Board. So they had to cobble together a team from somewhere, and Floyd Reefer was asked to captain it. So he got two more test matches, you know, 10 years later. Didn't make any runs. Bangladesh won their first ever series, test series, and they beat the West Indies in that, which was quite glorious. Now, this is sort of tangential to where I'm going with 217, but 217 is Floyd Reefer playing against Bangladesh with a second string side. What happened only a couple of months ago, a few weeks ago, the West Indies had to get together a second string side to go and play Bangladesh, this time because they were touring Bangladesh and a lot of the West Indies key players didn't want to go. And we've talked a lot about the batting average of Kyle Mayers, who is currently averaging 66 after his four tests, the same number that Floyd Reefer played on his first time around. But it's worth noting that Kyle Mayers was originally a bowling all-rounder who somehow made himself into a test number four. He has been doing a little bit of bowling in his test career, and he's picked up four wickets, and he is averaging 21.7, 217 apiece, and conceding less than two per over. And in terms of players who average 21.7 with the ball, you could also look at one Charlotte Edwards, who we never think about in this capacity, but she bowled leg breaks, barely bowled the first 8 years of her career, didn't bowl at all the last five, but had a patch from 2005 to 2011 where she bowled a lot and took most of her 54 wickets in one day international cricket, 4 for 30, her best of, and finished with a bowling average of 21.7. So there are some options for you, Hamish.
I like it a lot. Of course, Lottie picked up a wicket in the 2009 World Cup final at North Sydney Oval. Might have picked up a couple, actually, bowling those leg breaks. Didn't know our bowling average was so low. How about Kyle Mayers, by the way? A batting average that they often say the sign of a true all-rounder is a higher batting average than the bowling average. In his case, his batting average is three times his test bowling
45
average.
45 runs.
I mean, imagine he maintains that. Excellent. Thank you, Hamish. Thank you, Richard. Jeff, next up today, Christopher Byrne with 246.
The 246 from Christopher Byrne does come in with a clue. Solely selected, says Christopher, so that it would give you guys an opportunity to say a positive word about one of the 25, acknowledging that this person has done quite a lot to court the negative words as well. One of the 25, Adam.
One of the 25. I might come back to the 25 at the end and just deal with the 246 to begin with. It's the highest test scorer of Geoffrey Boycott, who, yes, we have been critical of, well, fairly consistently and routinely on the final word. And it's A really interesting story, though, and it kind of says a lot about cricket in the 60s in England especially. So Boycott makes 246 at Leeds, his home ground, in 1967 against the touring Indians. They go on to make 550 in their first innings in England, and they eventually win the Test match. But it took Boycott 555 deliveries across 573 minutes, so basically 2 days, to get to 246. And the first day of that, he made only 106 not out, so that was his score overnight. And India had lost two bowlers to injury through that day. And it stood out, how slow the innings were stood out so much that, astonishingly, they dropped him for the next Test match. And the reason they declared was because they thought it was, quote, selfish batting. So Brian Close was the captain, and he wanted to keep Boycott in the team, but the selectors were adamant that they dropped Ken Barrington on similar grounds for batting too slowly two summers before in 1965. So they felt like there was a precedent in position. And because Boycott had batted so slowly on a road when India's attack was depleted, that it was only right that he'd be left out of the next Test match. So Boycott went and did what he was always going to do and smashed 584 runs in his next four innings for Yorkshire, went out of the Test team and forced his way back in for the final engagement of the summer. But he never got over it. As he said when he retired, it's a stigma I will always carry. I won't forget it, and I can't forgive, because I think it was an unnecessary thing to do. That's calling it the selfish batting. And in terms of the 25, Jeff, we think that probably relates to the fact that he was one of 25 rebel tourists. Of course, Boycott finished his career going away to South Africa in 1981, I think it was. So we don't have that exact figure in front of us, but we think that's what it probably relates to.
I did have a look into the Rebel Tours, and the first one was a squad of 12, plus they signed three injury replacements later.
Right.
And the second had a squad of 15. So 30 who went, but maybe there are only 25 who played in those matches.
Yeah.
That might be. I haven't gone through the scorecards to tally that up. But yeah, that's what I'm assuming the reference is about.
And what an incredible reference point, though. I mean, making a double ton. I mean, I've got to say, 246 across 2 days. I mean, sure, it's slow going, but it's not deathly slow going. Per the reports at the time, it was mostly due to having only 106 runs to his name on a day where they felt they could have done better and this precedent in place. But that just wouldn't happen now. I mean, a player batting terribly slowly, a turgid innings, wouldn't result in being dropped after making that many runs. So yeah, as I say, I think it kind of reflects the times and the way in which they saw themselves as entertainers, perhaps, or some version of that. But yeah, a fascinating footnote to the Boycott career that his highest score came before a Test match where he was dropped.
And I was truly surprised to hear you say that there was something that he never got over. just seems very uncharacteristic that he held on to a grudge late. That's just came out of nowhere. Let us move on, shall we?
Yes.
Our next number, our final number indeed, is another double header. It comes in from Will Day and Chris Swales, friends of the show both. The number is $3.84, and we have an open field to interrogate this number. Adam, 384, what did you make of it?
Yeah, I couldn't help but see the lovely contrast between Jeff Boycott, who had that reputation as a player who really played for himself, and the 384th Test cricketer for Australia, Simon Cadditch, who I suppose had the reputation of being the very opposite, of course, out. Was it four times in the 90s, a couple of times for 99, one of those run out, and generally speaking, kind of the epitome of a team player. Across his 56 Test matches, averaged 45, 10 tons, dropped inexplicably at the end of 2010. Thought it was worth going through his story in a little bit of detail. So remember, Jeff, when we would have been, I suppose, teenagers, that the only player you would hear talked about as a kid coming through was Simon Cadditch. Oh, this Simon Cadditch at the Cricket Academy. Mm. Oh, he's going to be captain of Australia. He's the guy. He's the man. And that's how it turned out. But I've actually had the chance to talk to Cad about this. He had unrealistic expectations on his shoulders when he first walked in to Shield Cricket as like a 20-year-old or whatever it was, with everybody saying, well, this guy's definitely going to captain Australia one day. Anyway, it took him a couple of years and he started to realise that potential, made five centuries in the summer of 98-99, got himself on the Test Tour of Sri Lanka later in 1999, eventually got himself a Test match in 2001, the Test match that Mark Butcher made his 173. Cadditch was the spare bat on that tour, and because Steve Waugh didn't play, Cat got his opportunity. He was out again after that, but got that extended run through 2003 and 2004, made his first test ton at the SCG in the Steve Waugh farewell test match. He went on one of his three India tours in 2004, that successful trip where they finally, what would you say, do you climb the final frontier? Do you pass the final frontier? Whatever it was. Do you reach the final frontier? Whatever it was.
Conquer,
there it is. That's the word I'm looking for. They conquered the final frontier with Simon in the side.
Strictly speaking, that doesn't really work because a frontier is a border, you know. So really, yeah. I guess you just cross it.
Cross.
It's maybe not that eventful. You get there and you walk across and you're on the other side, you know.
Yep.
Australia, America. Australia, America. We don't tolerate that kind of crap in America, sir.
Simon was obviously in the 05 Ashes team because I say obviously that they are the test matches which we've seen more than any other as far as highlights and all the rest, and unfairly dropped. Yes. After I felt he got a couple of stinking decisions and was collateral damage there. It took him a couple of years to get back.
I remember him being not out for about a day and a half while it rained. That's my defining memory of the 05 Ashes for Simon.
And there's that leg before wicket, I think in the fourth test match, which pitches like 6 inches outside the leg stump, and he's walking off the ground. I mean, he's got a temper on him, as we know, and he wasn't too pleased. Was it perhaps Billy Bowden who might have made the fateful decision there? But anyway, it takes until the 2007-08 Shield season where he goes bananas and hits
Billy Bowden was standing on his head, just spitting on the spot at the time, doing some breakdance too or something.
Speaking of Billy Bowden, two things to note about Billy Bowden. First of all, he umpired the England New Zealand games recently, the women's games, which was a total throwback. I'm like, wow, this guy's still doing his job. And the other thing is that, you know, I mean, you've seen how I've been able to teach Winnie to do certain tricks because she's a small baby and thus impressionable. One of the things I've got her doing now is her Billy Bowden, where she puts her finger up and down like this, which I thought was quite cute. So there's the making the telephone noise when she touches my belly button and doing her Billy Bowden, and she knows what it means. She does her finger like up and down again. This won't work on the podcast, but Jeff can see what I'm talking about. It's pretty amazing that one of the first things she can comprehend is a Billy Bowden finger, but I think that's good parenting.
He lives on, but that he's bobbed, I didn't notice he was playing I've been watching the games, but I didn't notice.
Yeah. The England games that were played in February, I suppose they would have been. He was officiating those. Back to Cat. What an incredible second stanza of his test career. I mean, from 2008 until 2010, he makes 8 centuries in 33 tests, averages over 50. And that's when Michael Clarke, in his infinite wisdom, who turned 40 last weekend, I should say, thought that he would dump Kadich, who he'd had a couple of run-ins with along the way. And that was that as far as his test career was concerned. He went on to keep playing first-class cricket until 2014, finishing up in England at 58 first-class hundreds, an average of 53. And yes, one of the greats of that generation, even though his test career, he didn't go on to play 100 test matches or anything like that. I think it's fair to say that from that generation, that superb generation, he was truly one of the standout performers. Simon Kadich, test cap 384.
That goes to Will Day. As for Chris Swales, I recall that Chris's last number, he's had a number before. This is his second number. You can do that on Nerd Pledge. You can edit your number once it's been done. And Chris's last number related to Nathan Lyon, who only recently, relatively, in terms of the number of wickets anyway, more than in terms of time, claimed wicket 384 in his career, now that he's up to 399, which would have meant that he went past Ian Botham's 383. But I decided that I wasn't convinced that getting Kiwi fast bowler Matt Henry stumped at the MCG in the second of 4 innings in a large win was particularly notable. So maybe wicket number 384 was not what Chris was going for. He didn't want me to recall that in great detail. One of Nathan Lyon's 17 career stumpings, wickets taken by stumpings rather. Nathan's not performing the stumpings himself. It's very nearly Glenn McGrath's one-day batting average, which is 3.83, not 3.84. Disappointed to miss out on that one. So I decided in the end it's going to relate to Keith Miller's debut test series, if you will, because he debuted in a single test in New Zealand earlier in 1946, but then his first full series was the 46-47 Ashes, in which he did things like taking 9 for 77 in a match in Brisbane, made 79 in that match, made his first ton. Usman Khawaja's favourite number, 141 not out in Adelaide, and finished up for the series with 16 wickets at 20 and 384 runs at an average of 77.384 for Keith Miller, who we spoke about on the show a few weeks ago, but just coming back to that.
Very nice, Jeff. I think that might be a nice place to leave it for our new numbers. You can send us a Nerd Pledge, patreon.com/thefinalword. We mentioned at the start of the show that we're above 600, charging towards 614. If you want to jump on now in the next couple of weeks, the next week and a half, I suppose, it'll give you the chance to join Jeff and me to watch us record our weekly show on what might be the 20th of April, I think, Jeff. So, yes, get on board, patreon.com/thefinalword. Ping us a Nerd Pledge. As we've said throughout the course of the last 12 months or so, it has made all the difference having so many people out there willing to support us from around the cricketing world. We just love getting your messages and DMs. A beautiful little community there of people talking to each other in the comments and all the rest of it. So if you can join us, that would be lovely. We'll take a break, and when we return, a few revisits, some confirmations, some correspondence, and some bannerments.
Hi, I'm Ebony Rainford-Brent, and you're listening to The Final Word with Adam Collins and Jeff Lemon.
Jeff, it occurred to me when listening back to Storytime last week that we didn't do the best job we could have possibly done when explaining the Wisden Cricketers' Almanac of 2021 and the various offers. We got there in the end, but it took us about 7 minutes to explain the various connotations and permutations. Here's the key information. By listening to The Final Word, you unlock a number of ways to receive a discounted copy of The Bible of Cricket coming out next week. Lawrence Booth will be on The Final Word to tell us all about it. And now we're going to tell you how to pre-order it and get yourself a sweet, sweet discount. Over to you, Jeff.
I like that. That was very efficient. The Wisden Almanac is a large book about cricket. It comes out once a year and it contains all of the information that you could wish to know about the cricket that happened in the preceding year. That's the fundamental concept of the Wisden Almanac. That's the elevator pitch when you're trying to get that movie greenlit. Starring any one of various Hemsworths, that's how you get it done. So it's a big book, which means it's an expensive book, normally, unless you buy it through these sweet hints that we can give you, in which case it becomes a much cheaper book.
Yeah, and here's the thing, Jeff. Thick book, right? Thick book. I've got 30 or 40 possibly sitting on my shelf as I look up at the moment. Indeed, my computer is currently balanced on the 1989, 1990, and 1991 editions of Wisden. This year,
straight flush.
Instead of there being about 1,100 pages, there are 288 fewer pages to trawl through. However, there are 60 more pages of writing. So what Lawrence Booth, the editor, has done is realised and acknowledged that there was less cricket played in 2020 due to COVID. And he's really indulged the first two sections of the book where you get all your fantastic essays. And in this particular edition, there's a big focus on what COVID-19 did to cricket, but also Black Lives Matter. That was such a big part of the conversation around the sport in 2020. So it was only appropriate that features right up the front, alongside all the usual bits and pieces that we love, leading cricketers in the world, the five Wisden cricketers, and yes, some of the best cricket writing. I know that when you and I have written for the Almanac in the past, that whatever we get paid for it, there's a standard rate you get paid, we put in at least four or five times the amount of work into a Wisden Almanac essay that you might for a normal article, because it's special. You know that people like us will ultimately be reading these pieces in 30 or 40 years' time. You want the words to matter, and they always do in the good book.
All of that is true. You know that it's there to last. And so you can get those words which are going to last, and you can look back on them in years to come fondly, as you might with your descendants, perhaps. And, you know, you'd rather that your descendants cost you 30% less than they will cost you. And that is what can happen with this offer. So if you're in Australia or if you're in the USA, all you have to do is pre-order it before the publication date, which for America is in June. For Australia, it's in August. Whatever. Just do it this month or next month. You'll be fine. You pre-order it by going to wisdenalmanac.com/2021 and you put in a code, which is WM30. All of that will be in the show notes. You don't need to remember that. Just read the texty bit underneath this episode and you will get a 30% discount, which is a lot considering it costs £55. So 30% of that is heaps. You work it out. I don't have time for this. Then if you're in the UK, you can subscribe to it and you can buy this £55 book for £35 when you subscribe. So there are various options there that you can do in concert with magazine subscriptions or subscribing on its own or for certain amounts of time and all the rest of it. The important thing is they're all at Wisden Almanac with a CK, almanac.com/2021. Go there, sort it out. Don't say we didn't warn you.
Hi, I'm Matt Renshaw, and you're listening to the Final Word podcast.
Final Word story time, Adam Collins and Jeff Lemon. Time to revisit some numbers that we got wrong, and you helped us, hopefully, get them right. The first of which is 258 for Abhilash Singh. We reflected upon one of the all-time great DOBs, that of Harry William Ginger Lee. Abhilash loves being part of that segment. An honour being part of the Dusty Old Barca, so I'm grateful that he felt that way. There's another clue, though, Jeff, which you've gone and tended to, and it is every batsman should try and give a simple catch to this player and enjoy their career best performance. Over to you.
I'm going to start by saying I don't know the answer to this. This is one where I wanted to get the crowd in because I like this clue. I just can't quite work out what it means. So ponder it for a second. Every batsman should try to give a simple catch to this player and enjoy their career best performance. So what I started thinking about was, is there a player who has caught a number of other players who've made their highest score in Test cricket, for the sake of argument, because that was the easiest one to look at. But what I've found is that there's nothing really obvious among the top catch takers across the history of the game. So Mark Boucher only, of players who made over 100, say, that I was looking at, Boucher caught Wavell Hines for 213, but that was Boucher's only highest score player who he dismissed. Adam Gilchrist only caught Paul Collingwood for his 206. MS Dhoni got Brendan McCullum for the 302. And Gary Balance, your favourite, for whatever that was, 150-something.
More my favourite for what he did off the cricket field in that nightclub in Nottingham. But anyway. Oh, tonight I'm not a cricketer. I'm just a drunken bastard. One day I will party with Gary Balance and it'll be a great night.
Balanche, Gary Balanche. Mushfiqur Rahim got Martin Guptill for his, 189 did Guptill get? Yep. And Kusal Mendes for his 196. But, there was nobody who had, say, four or five players for their highest scores. So I don't know if I'm completely on the wrong track with that. But I wanted to see what people think. I'm actually curious in the crowd response to this. So to revisit that number once again, the number is 258. And the clue is every batsman should try and give a simple catch to this player and enjoy their career best performance. So either it's not about cricket at all and it's something sort of sneaky with the words, or it is and I'm not getting it. But over to you. Let us know. Send us a message.
Yeah, that's a good one to send away. So thank you, Abhilash Singh. We'll keep that going into a third week. Next up, we have Peter T with 614. I always think of, when I read that name, Peter G, who was the fantastic VFA commentator when we were kids on Channel 2. We said for 614, either Imran Khan, 6-14 against India, which we've talked about a couple of times, or Gary Gilmore's in the World Cup semi-final of 1975. Peter informed us that he's not a cricket historian, so he enjoyed learning about those old two stories. However, 614 for him is a more contemporary and esoteric number. It's a South Australian number associated with one of my favourite one-day matches. The number represents non-standard bowling figures, i.e. they represent wickets taken and something other than the total runs conceded. Not sure how much that helps, but I hope it does. Well, Jeff, I reckon it might have.
It helped a lot, Peter. It helped a lot because 6 and 14, but not in a standard bowling analysis related to South Australia in one-day cricket. How could it be anything but the day that the wild thing, Sean Tate, took 6 wickets and bowled 14 wides in a match against New South Wales? So all up, 6 for 41, but that means he conceded 27 off the bat and 14 wides. So didn't bowl any no balls that day. The great thing about this is that he took those 6 wickets while defending 154. That's what South Australia had made. He was batting at number 11, made a duck. They were defending 154 against a strong New South Wales side. New South Wales got their 9 wickets down because Sean Tate just wrecked them. 5 of the top 6, including a run out for the other one, just smashed through them. And you could argue that if he hadn't conceded the 14 wides, then it would have been almost impossible for New South Wales to win. But also, if he had bowled any differently, he probably wouldn't have taken the 6 wickets. So they got their 9 wickets down, and who was the hero with the bat? But SCG McGill, 4 not out to steer New South Wales home to that win at number 11. That is Peter T's 614.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you, Jeff. Good to get Final Word fave Stuart McGill back into the show. Next in our revisit section is 484 from the President. Richard Bob McNally. We talked about Martin Donnelly. We talked about a stacked England team in 2003, but neither of those were correct, Jeff.
Yeah, the President says that we are correct in thinking that he's based in the UK, and says that while I have no personal ambition to become president here, should the people slash army put their trust in me, then it would be my solemn and sacred duty to serve. We'll have to revisit 484, he says. It's related to his last pledge. However, it's about a man who never played county cricket. His last pledge was 366, which was the score that Neil Fairbrother made in the famous summer of 1990 when the cricket ball had all the stitches taken out and basically every batsman in the world made a million runs.
Yes.
And Neil Fairbrother made 366. So we've got to have something related to Neil Fairbrother that relates to someone who never played county.
Well, Jeff, as you scolded me for last week, I've read some of the clue, but not all of the clue. I knew Richard's last pledge was Neil Fairbrother. And as soon as I saw that, I got cracking. I didn't read the bit about it being a player who never played county cricket. But nevertheless, I'll be incorrect in saying Ken Shuttleworth, who's also from Lancashire, who played five test matches under Illingworth in that successful and famous tour of 1970-71, including 5 for 47 on debut at the Gabba. He was a quick bowler, but unfortunately never got the chance to play test matches again. Played in the first one-day international ever played, indeed, has the first wicket in one-day international cricket for England at the MCG after there was that rained-out test in early 71. That was Keith Stackpole. A long career with Lancashire, either side of his international career, where he took 484 wickets at just under 23, another 147 wickets at first, at one-day level, rather, an average of just 18. He's very well known, if I understand the story correctly, for having thoroughly indulged and enjoyed himself during a centenary test. So they all got invited to stay at the Hilton, or what was known as the Hilton then, Jeff, across the road from the MCG. Mm-hmm. Every player who was alive got a gong, got an invite, got a flight to Melbourne for that week. And he was allegedly best on ground every single night. And then much, much later became a first-class umpire between 1998 and 2003. But despite the fact that he took 484 wickets for the same county as Neil Fairbrother, it can't be him because, yes, the second half of the clue, which I didn't read.
I really did tell you off for that, didn't I? You're wasting your time. It's like that story.
You're wasting your mother's time. You're wasting
the baby balloon that goes into his parents' room in the night and like undoes the dad's valve a bit and lets a bit of air out, and then undoes mum's valve a bit and lets some air out, and then in the morning they come into his room and they say, "We know what you did last night. You've let me down. You've let your father down."
What is it, Jeff? What is it? Tell us 484.
484. I've got no idea with this one either. But I just wanted to let you know that while I was looking forensically at Mark Boucher trying to solve the previous number about who he dismissed for their highest score, I just happened to notice that Mark Boucher took 484 List A catches. Now, that's our number. And I thought, 484, that's familiar. That looks like a number I've been sweating over for 2 hours already today. 484 catches in List A cricket and never played county cricket. So I thought, could it be related to Mark Boucher? Does he have any link to Neil Fairbrother? Yes, because they did play against one another in Bangladesh in 1998 in the Wills International Cup, when a red-letter day for England, when Neil Fairbrother and Adam Holyoake set the English record partnership for the sixth wicket in one-dayers of 112, a record that's been broken about 80 times in the years since when England got good at one-day cricket. But it was one of those extremely hot Bangladesh days, and Adam Holyoake basically got heat stroke and couldn't captain the fielding innings because he was so exhausted. But yeah, Boucher was playing in the South African team that day. I don't think that has anything to do with 484, but it was fun.
Let us know, President McNally. It's not going to be Ken Shuttleworth. It's probably not going to be Mark Boucher, but you will give us the correct answer and we'll come back to it for a third time next week.
I think this is white flag time for the Prez. I think we're surrendering to the standing army, the well-regulated militia of President Richard Bond McNally.
And Jeff, we might take out some insurance actually before we move off the Prez. We better make sure, given he might have a coup attempt in him at some point, that we make him the Seabus Super before performer of the weekend. We don't want to get caught in the crossfire.
Yeah, I think that's probably wise. It's like giving Prince Philip a knighthood or whatever. It was just insurance. Can't hurt. Don't throw away your innings in retirement, President. Visit cbussuper.com.au/thefinalword. You can get a PDS there to find out if Cbus Super is right for you, and you can remember that past performance is not a reliable indicator of future performance.
That you can, and you can remember that it's a great time to get your superannuation sorted out. If you haven't got it dealt with, go to Cbus. Let them help you. They have helped us over a long period of time. We love you, Cbus. We do. We love you, Cbus. It's true. We love you, Cbus. We do. Oh, Cbus, we love you. Next up, we have Pat McKeon. Now, we said Gregor McGregor among myriad other Scottish links. I like Gregor McGregor the most, so I pulled it out as the reference there for 352. Mm. We didn't actually hear back from Pat yet, but we did from Greg Sykes, and I quite like this, and it'll certainly be what he was talking about. Gavin Hamilton, used to watch him growing up playing for Yorkshire, says Greg. He was famous for playing one test for England, bagging a pair and taking none for 63. However, he was far more successful playing one day internationals for Scotland. He finished his career with 1,231 one day runs at 35.17 or 35.2. The number is 3.52. It works for me. I've actually got Gavin Hamilton's phone number. I sent him a number of WhatsApps a couple of years ago, desperately trying to interview him to be our Scottish rep on The Greatest Season That Was Presents 99. And he left me on Blue Bombers for, like, each time I wrote him, I get the red receipts, the two blue ticks. Never did I receive a reply. So obviously he had absolutely no interest in talking to our podcast about the 99 World Cup, where I think from memory he made about 80-odd against the Australians in the first game of the tournament. But not to be, but I'm pretty sure that'll be the solution for Pat McKeon.
However, can I say that bagging a pair and taking none for 63 with the ball, he'd be an absolute walk-up start for Dara Ismail Khan. Maybe we should drop him another message and see if we can get him on the tour.
It's worth a try.
And get him into
that.
Got the
number.
You know, see if it's worth another salvo.
Jeff, next one for you here. Now, we, for 168 and Jesse G, we initially said Jonathan Trott at Melbourne, 2010, famous innings, one of his best. Mm-hmm. We looked at Keith Miller. It was his test cap. Jesse gave us a lot of clues. I think the main one to reflect upon is that it is a considerable score from a player for a country that isn't one of the big three, but it really stands out for that country. That's the best synthesis of the clues that Jesse sent us, and that sent you into the Pakistani spreadsheets.
And also worth noting that Jesse's first number as a multiple pledger as well related to the four consecutive one-day international centuries scored by Kumar Sangakkara. So just pop that in the back of your mind. Mm-hmm. 168 as a test match score, and as the highest score in a test match, that was the other clue there, is a score that Zahir Abbas made to beat India in the third test of a series in 1982-3. So it wasn't the first time that Pakistan had beaten India in a series, but it was still a Pakistan-India series, a six-test series, a massive deal. I think Pakistan had won the first test. There'd been a draw in the second. So winning this third one meant they went 2-0 up in six tests that happened in Pakistan, where a lot of games were drawn. So it pretty much sealed the series. You know, it would have made it extremely difficult for them to countenance losing the series from there. And they made a massive score. They made 652. Four players made tons. I liked the span of the characters who made the tons. So Javed Miandad, presumably batting in the I Love New York cap. Salim Malik, sports betting enthusiast Salim Malik. Imran Khan, the massive root rat, as he was at that stage of his life. And then Zahir Abbas, the tall, bespectacled, graceful right-hander. So as far as a link to Kumar Sangakkara goes, because Jesse did say that there was some connection, one's a right-hander, one's a left-hander. Zahir Abbas didn't keep wickets. So they do have a gracefulness that you could say they share. They're both relatively taller and languid sort of players. But as far as something that could link them, Zahir Abbas was a prolific one-day international player as well. Not so much remembered for that, but, you know, really one of the greats in that era, and was the first player to ever make three one-day international centuries in consecutive innings. Quite a few players have done that since, but he was the first to do it. And thus, equally held that record until Sangakkara went past that with four. And an interesting sort of link to that, which may not be related to what Jesse's thinking, is that the 168 he made in the Test match was actually the last in a run of five international tons in consecutive innings. So we've talked a lot about Everton Weekes being the only player to make five Test centuries in consecutive innings and then get given run out with a dodgy decision on 90 in the sixth. But Zahir Abbas did this in a mix of Tests and one-day internationals. He made 100 in the first Test of this series and the second and the third, only batted once in each of those Test matches and played two one-dayers in between where he also made hundreds.
Brilliant.
So he made five consecutive hundreds for Pakistan in the sixth innings. It was in a Test match and he was not out for a low score, didn't get much of a chance to bat, but wasn't dismissed. And then played a one-dayer after that and made another 100. So he actually made five out of six, or six out of seven, rather, in the streak that he put together. So maybe in terms of sick streaks, I think he's also a player who made a 200 and a 100 in a Test, where Sangakkara went on to make a 300 and a 100 in a Test. Mm-hmm. So there are some links to the Sri Lankan maestro, which might satisfy Jesse. And if not, I'm white flagging on that one as well. That is the best that I can do for you, Jesse G.
If it's good enough for you and it's good enough for me, let's hope it's good enough for our good friend Jesse G. That's the end of our revisits for today. Let's confirm some numbers that we did get right in previous episodes. The first of those was from Bernie Prinz. We last week paid tribute to Torquil McKillop's unbeaten 205 for Tallangatta Cricket Club. Bernie wrote us to say he's proud to listen to our podcast and he thanks us for addressing mental health and not just the token gestures that other media outlets give it. He says that he trusted us with his sadness and we handled it with empathy and context, and yeah, that was a very kind message to receive. And yeah, again, we hope that you're going okay, Bernie, and likewise everyone at the Tallangatta Cricket Club.
Yeah, thanks, Bernie. We appreciate those words very much. The 727 from Ilya Andrews, which linked us to Frank Tyson, who we speculated must have been Ilya's cricket coach. Indeed, that was correct. Frank Tyson coached Graham Yallop in the 60s, and then when Ilya was spending some time at Carey Grammar is where that must be. He'd ended up all the way back there in the 1990s and was overseeing operations once again. That school also produced, Ilya says, the Wizard of Wangaratta, Graham Vimpany, who has been on the show possibly more times than his cricketing record deserves.
A disproportionate number of times relative to what he did for Victoria. Thanks to Dane Hanstead, of course, on that front.
I stumbled across a Rob Olinda clip of Graham Vimpany playing a reverse sweep, or maybe a switch hit. He actually changes his hands on the bat in a tournament that was very confusing. The scorecard was confusing the hell out of me until I realised it was a Malaysia Super Sixes or something where you could score, you know, 8 or 12 off a single ball, because all the players were like 78 from 33 balls. And I'm like, this is the 1990s. What's going on here? Yeah, so Vimpany, he still pops around. Jeff Allardyce was another one who we, you know, constantly harangue about the rules of the game and what needs to be done. And also Dean Kino, who worked for CA, and Damien Bowne, who worked for CA as well. So there's a fair bit of cricket connection to Ilya's alma mater.
And Ilya was also pleased to hear that Frank Tyson clip we dropped into Storytime last week when he sums up the end of the centenary test, calling it the Olympic Games of cricket. I love that. I love that bit at the end of that documentary. So a good excuse to watch it again and listen back on Storytime. 309, Jeff, was Joel Burton. We talked about Joel Garner's one-day international economy rate, staggering economy rate, 3 runs and over. Incredible. We got it. And Joel said it was our show is a lovely way to unwind, listening to the two of us after a rough shift. Well, Joel, it's great to have your company as it is every week. Nick O'Connell, 663. Jeff, you were spot on in saying it was Callum Ferguson's one-day international run haul. Next was 385 from Ethan Morgan. We talked about Chandrasekhar. Ethan came back to us and solved it, essentially. So Martin Love is the number. Jeff, you nodded to this in your original answer. He is Ethan's favourite cricketer of all time. And back in 2019, he originally had this number for us and came back to it, but he loved all the options we went through. But 385 being Martin Love's cap number is what Ethan was pointing us towards.
Mike Lee says that £2.36 was indeed 236, Carl Hooper's highest first-class score, made at Kent. Mike says, growing up in Kent in the 1990s, he was the epitome of overseas star. The languid stroll to the crease, the sun hat, the ability to change a game with bat or ball. As David Fulton put it in choosing Kent's greatest 11 in Wisden Cricket Monthly, touched by genius. And then David Crook, the $4.21 regarding Pat Cummins' figures at Adelaide. After the result in Adelaide, says David, I was hoping Cummins' series average might be low enough to make for a good pledge number. Alas, he ended up carrying half the attack and it blew out to double figures. So I reverted to the Adelaide demolition. It had to be Cummins because I'm all about the great man. Whomst amongst us can resist the enormous blue eyes and shining smile of Pat Cummins? And David was happy to see Nathan Lyon's cap was number 421, just as a bonus.
Thank you, David. The last of our revisits, Jeff, you're going to enjoy this. This was 614 and the other 614 from Richard Clark. We correctly, via Richard's help, worked out that it was his daughter Emily, 6-14, for Worcestershire's under-15s back in 2015. Mm. Now, we, looking at the scorecard, thought that they must have been defending 144 and that she essentially bowled out Herefordshire at the last to pull off a stunning win. That's not quite how it played out.
We were very excited. We were extremely excited. We reconstructed the entire last couple of overs, ball by ball, working out what the score must have been at various points, when the wickets fell, and just what a ridiculous performance this was, defending four off the last over to win the game, alas.
Yes, in the end, Worcestershire bowled first, not second. That was Herefordshire they defeated. But Emily also scored the winning run. They needed one run to win, and she squeezed a single yes. through backward point. In confusion, they ran two, and the scorers put it down as two in the book rather than one. Four not out is also her career best at county level. Unfortunately, she's no longer playing, but the time she had playing for Worcestershire was a great one, according to our old man, playing 50-odd games in the age groups, which is something that he was never able to do. Richard supported Worcestershire his whole life. It's the county where his dad, so Emily's granddad, took Richard when he was still in nappies, and he's a life member there now at age 82. So for her to play at that ground where Glenn Turner made his century before lunch, the day that Charles and Diana got married in 1981, the same ground that was shared with the local football club they also supported throughout their lives, and where the granddad is now president, it all means a tremendous amount to the family that Emily was able to be part of that tradition and wear the cap of Worcestershire for those 5 years. So I thought that was a nice way to tie off that 6-14, Jeff.
And have a pretty decent day out, 6-14 and four not out, her high score.
5 wickets in an over, of course. The 6-14, we probably buried the lead there. That's why it's so significant.
Yeah, 5 in an over, just the casual. No hat trick, just 5 in an over, no fuss. You know, don't want to hog the limelight. We like to finish this show off with a little bit of Bannerman Watch, where we look for Bannerman-related scores. That is, scores in which one player has made more than 67.35% of the runs in a completed innings. Alan Edgar has sent through what he's calling a reverse Bannerman. So we've had a lot of variations on the Bannerman recently. The reverse, says Alan, has the criteria that it's an opener who carries their bat but sees the team make more than 67.35% of the total runs. So you get Bannermans by the rest of the players despite batting through the entire innings. The most interesting is from the man who, as a result, holds the third lowest individual first-class score from a player carrying his bat. This is none other than Alec Bannerman, younger brother of Charles Bannerman, who blocked an unbeaten 7 runs from the 60 made off 45 overs by the Australians in 1893 in Canterbury. So the breadth of Bannermaning within the one family is extraordinary.
Thank you, Alan, for sending that through. That's an absolute corker. And John O'Halen also sent through a Bannerman, non-Bannerman. I think we were calling it a Fannerman last week, the fake Bannermans, which was made on the...
Maybe we could spell it with an F-A-U-X, like a phonemon.
Yes.
You know, just to really be classy.
That'll do the trick. And this is from the day that Jody Hicks played in the grand final a couple of weeks ago, of course, Jono being our Jody Hicks correspondent. It falls into the category of a successful chase that we described recently, which is technically why it's a non-Bannerman. So Jono was keeping an eye on a two-day fixture with a bunch of players he used to coach playing in a senior grand final for Seven Hills RSL, playing against Kings Langley in the B6 division. And poor old Sevo were rolled for 89, and then they went on to jag a couple of wickets late on day one. They continued to roll through Kings Langley on day two, and none of the batters could surpass three runs. So they're in a pretty good position with the ball defending 89, except for their number six, Rajdeep Singh, who came out with the score at 4 for 13, and then Kings Langley got to their victory target, 9 for 91. They win by one wicket, and Rajdeep Singh finishes with 62 not out, which is 68.13%, and the next best score for their team was just three. Talk about a match-winning effort. Coming in at 4 for 13, chasing 90, making an unbeaten 62. No one else makes more than three. Yes, it may not be a Bannerman, but in excess of 67.35. It's an honorary Bannerman and a mighty grand final winning effort, Jeff.
Well, maybe if you make that sort of percentage of the runs, nine wickets down in a run chase, it should be called a Rajdeep. Maybe that deserves to have its own naming structure. And so, you know, you can send us Rajdeeps as well if you happen to find any. A little bit of correspondence from Anurban. I was just interested in this because we've been talking about cricket in America quite a bit recently. The gentlemen of Philadelphia with the first class status that their team enjoys that World Series cricket does not, the USA playing against Australia in the Champions Trophy, etc. And Urban's been reading Ralph Waldo Emerson of that sort of early era of rugged American outdoors stuff, and has found various cricket references, which he thinks is interesting because you don't expect to find them in American literature. This from an essay called Experience. Nature does not like to be observed and likes that we should be her fools and playmates. We may have the sphere for our cricket ball, but not a berry for our philosophy, which I take to mean that we can play with the world as we would with a cricket ball, but we're not allowed to look at fruit. That is my understanding of that line. So yes, some Americans were aware of cricket. That's a thing.
That's a very nice high-end way to interpret that from an urban and American cricket, the relationship between the game and the country. All I can think of, though, is Mr. Sheffield, Mr. Sheffield Shield. And we did say on the weekly show that we want to see the Sheffield Shield have an exhibition game between the two teams that play in the final in Flushing, Queens, where Fran Drescher comes and watches. And well, if you want to hear more about that, I refer you to the weekly show. And our very last bit of correspondence for this week, Jeff, comes from Will Unwin. It's a simple piece of correspondence as well about his brother Chris, who has his birthday on the 11th of April next week. And he wanted to put forward number 217 for his brother, the amount of times Chris Unwin left it on middle during his cricket career. And happy birthday and all the rest. I like it. From one brother to another, Will to Chris. And from all of us, Chris, we hope you have a great day on the 11th of April. Jeff, I think that's the end of the show. Thank you to everybody who's popped their head up with a Nerd Pledge, patreon.com/thefinalword. We've said it before, we'll say it again. We love making the weekend show. It's time-consuming. It's a lot of work, but it is absolutely worth it, as is all the various conversations we have on our Patreon page. We'd love to have you part of it. patreon.com/thefinalword. We're grateful to all the support we get from C by Super. Likewise, the Wisden Almanac, as we mentioned before, look in the show notes for your chance to get a significant and sweet discount on the good book when it's released later in the week. And Jeff, we're also ever so grateful to the team at Bad Producer Productions.
Bad Producer Podcast Network, they have shows, other shows that are about other things. So, you know, you probably don't need another cricket show, but you could go and listen to some shows about something else. I don't know what you've got to fill your time. That's a decision for you. Thanks to Dave Collins, who edits the show week in, week out, twice week in, twice week out. And thanks to Adam, who makes the show with me. You may have noticed that's fairly essential. I think it would be difficult to do this on my own.
This has been the Final Word Story Time. Have a lovely weekend.
Bye.
I had to go.